and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler. I'm your interim host. And as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert, Rick Bram. Rick, it's been a couple weeks. What have you been up to? How are you doing?
Doing well. Just, you know, plugging away at the outcomes from the trade deadline and all the little shakeups from all the reliever news, and looking forward to getting into that with you today.
So am I. We had a lot to cover in the last podcast, and we've sort of been recovering from that, focusing on our fantasy teams individually, as well as trying to put out a lot of great content on the site for all of our readers of Pitcherless, so that we can help everybody win their leagues as well. Unless you're in my league, then you're going down. But yeah, as always, we start these podcasts, these bullpen podcasts, covering Rick's article, Closing Time, in which he ranks the top 30 closers in baseball. And we always started out by talking about three closers that are moving up the chart and three closers that are moving down the chart. This week, we will be covering, you know, stuff from the last 2 weeks, but we're going to cover his most recent Closing Time article today. And the three relievers that are moving up his closer ranks this week are Camilo Duvall, Scott Barlow, and Rowan Wick. Tell me why you are higher on Camilo Duvall this week than you were in previous weeks.
I was a little bit worried in July when he only had one save in July, and it was partially like weird usage, and, you know, a lot had to do with Giants and inability to win close games. And he's just been better in August. He's got four saves already this month. Hasn't allowed a run yet. He's still issuing a little bit too many walks for, you know, what I would like to see, but, you know, he's good strikeout rate, so that helps balance it out a little bit. And my concern with him for the last couple of weeks was, does he fall out of favor with Gabe Kapler? You know, Kapler is weird with how he chooses who's going to close out games for him. So, you know, with the four saves already this month, it looks like he's still, without question, the closer there.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's getting more saves. He's not allowing runs. It's pretty good reasoning. But yeah, I mean, I said this, I think a few weeks ago, that there's just nobody else in that bullpen that's sort of pushing him. They had Jake McGee before, who got the majority of the saves last season, and now he's gone. He's on the Nationals. He's moved two different teams since being released by the Giants. So I think Duvall really doesn't have too much competition, and that's what's going to keep him in that role, especially as the Giants are sort of falling out of contention with their recent losses, the recent downfall over the past month. So I think Duvall's pretty safe. And yeah, if you're getting saves and not allowing runs, then what more could you ask for from your closers? Scott Barlow is the next guy. He's been very consistent all season. He's been quietly one of the better relievers in baseball. Why were you moving him up this week and not in prior weeks?
Yeah, like you said, one of the quiet better relievers in baseball. Just super efficient. And I haven't looked at this. I haven't looked at every closer, but I just, what was it, the stat? He has only allowed two or more runs in two of the 51 games he's appeared in this season, which is, you know, pretty near elite when it comes to, like, talking about closers. And, you know, you typically are allowed to, as we see with Craig Kimbrel, you're allowed to allow a run and still get a save. But, so Barlow's just been steady. And, you know, we talked about, I think, earlier in the year with his strikeouts being down, but those have ticked back up. Josh Staumont's completely fallen out of the conversation there. So he's all by himself in the closer role now, finally getting a chance to do that pretty much every time they need a save. And that showed with he's got the third most saves amongst all relievers over the past 2 months with 12. So he's definitely moving on up. And if the Royals could just get a couple more wins here and there, he'd, you know, move into that next tier potentially.
Yeah, that was the only point that I was going to make. It seems to be up to whether or not the Royals provide him with win chances. I'm not sure how to efficiently look up records over certain stretches by teams. I'm sure there's a way to do that if I spent the time to look, but I didn't do that prior to the podcast, so I'm not going to do it now. But I'm pretty sure the Royals have actually been a lot better over the last few weeks. Yeah, it's all Vinny Pasquantino, isn't it?
I agree. I would agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so they're setting Barlow up pretty well to finish the season strong, and he's going to be there for a couple more years. So they seem to have the closer of the present and the future, and he's been really good. One of the most reliable closers out there. And another player on a team that is a lot, maybe in the same tier as being bad. The Cubs aren't too great. And their closer since the deadline has been Rowan Wick, who has actually surprisingly been pretty good. But I was reading your closing time right before this podcast as I continue to catch up on pitcher list articles that I've fallen behind on. And I noticed that you said that Wick was not facing too many tough opponents, but I wrote in my most recent reliever ranks that he has been really good. I think he's allowed just two runs or something since the middle of July or something. I'd have to pull it up. But yeah, he's been pretty impressive. So is that why you're moving him up this week? Because he's been the clear cut closer out in Chicago and because he hasn't been as terrible as he was in the first half?
Basically, yes. I mean, especially now, and like looking at, he's there. There's just maybe is 18. That's probably even too high. Like 18 closers who are the sole closer on their, you know, on their team. So just being one of those guys who has no competition puts you or puts him in, you know, in the conversation to be a top 20 closer. So seeing that, yes, he has been pitching well, but couple of his saves came against the Nationals and the Reds, and you know, that's not really saying too much. And I'm pretty sure the Cubs get a nice schedule the rest of the way. They, you know, that division, you're going to face the Reds, you're going to face the Pirates, so that helps. But yeah, he just by the fact that he's the sole closer there moves him up, and there's not a lot to get excited about when it comes to whiff rate or, you know, a 1.65 whip on the season. But like, you know, when you're in a roto league and you're, you know, right now and you need saves, like you need to make some ground up when it comes to saves, like he's someone you're going to have to look to and turn to and just hope for the best.
He really doesn't have any competition out there. If people are watching, want to challenge their friends to some trivia, ask them to name three relievers in the Cubs bullpen besides Rowan Wick, and they will not be able to do so.
I will say, I don't want to get like sidetracked here, but I think he got a save today. Brandon Hughes, the lefty they have there, is pretty good. But I don't think he's much of a comp. I don't think he's much competition for Wick at this point. Maybe as the season goes on, but not right now.
Yeah, he is just not a well-known name. He does have over 30% strikeout rate and an ERA around 3, so that's pretty solid. And he's somehow thrown 37 innings this year, and I just didn't know. I thought he was one of the call-ups that came up after the deadline. But we probably shouldn't rag on the Cubs. That'll probably be a pretty long podcast. So let's move on to the three closers moving down. And it's some pretty notable names that were counted upon heavily throughout the first half by many fantasy managers. And those three are Josh Hader, Jorge Lopez, and Craig Kimbrel. Hader was the big midseason acquisition by the Padres. Not the biggest, though. They did get Juan Soto. But Hader was one of the most notable movers of the deadline. And he has not done exactly what the Padres had hoped for. I don't think so. And he's also been struggling over the last couple of months or so. And we haven't even seen him pitch in a while. And that's going to be something we get to a little bit later. But what was the main reason you were moving him down this week?
There's definitely some concerns with him. And yeah, like all three of the guys in this tier, we're going to end up talking about a little bit more in depth later. And for reasons why, you know, the reasons why they're moving down is what we're going to be touching on. So with Hader though, I think they're going to have to, he hasn't been right and nothing's changed. And I just think that they might give him, I mean, he hasn't pitched in a week, and that's something you brought up to me. And that's something where I think the Padres aren't going to win the NL West. they should be able to get a, well, they should have a wild card spot. So I don't know how much exactly they're playing for. And this is their biggest, this would be a lot of teams' biggest acquisitions at the trade deadline. For them, it's not. But, you know, he's a huge, you know, piece to their puzzle, and they need to make sure that they get him right. And if that's, you know, means resting him for more than, you know, what you're used to with a closer, then I'm sure they're going to go about, you know, doing that. So I don't know if he's going to be pitching a lot the rest of the way. He's probably going to be used in sparingly in one inning outings. There's just, I think Devin Williams is better than him right now and has been all year for the most part. So he moves down, and Hendricks has looked great lately. So he moves down to, Hader moves down just two spots, but it's becoming a bit of a concern with the, you know, we're in August and his ERA is at 4.66.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that I don't think anybody would have believed you before the season. This guy was going super early in drafts, like inside the top 30 in the majority of drafts, which is crazy. And he was really looking like the guy that everybody drafted with a scoreless streak through the beginning of June. But then since June 7th, he's tossed 19 innings and he has a 9 ERA. That's through June and July and half of August. He hasn't pitched since last Tuesday, which was August 9th. So it's really been quite a roller coaster of a season for Hader. It's sort of just one part of a roller coaster. He had the going up and then the going down. Now is up the hill and down the hill. It's a little bit of Sisyphean. How do you say that? Sisyphus. So he's hopefully can turn it around for the final month, especially for fantasy managers that spent such high draft capital on him. But another guy who was a offseason acquisition was Jorge Lopez. He went to the Minnesota Twins from the Baltimore Orioles. He was amazing with the Twins. And he was amazing with the Orioles. And since going to the Twins, he's been pretty mediocre. I know he's allowed some runs. I think some of those have come in non-save situations as well. Mm-hmm. But he's not been as incredible as he was in the first half that earned him an all-star selection, the first of his career. And why do you have him moving down this week?
Again, all these guys that moved down only moved down a couple spots. I think all of them moved down two spots. So I'm not like panicking yet, but for someone who, so he just came over, he's been with the team for 2 weeks and he was great with the Orioles as their closer, but I don't think he's really, he does not owe, you know, the closer role here. So if, you know, he's had a couple bad outings, if, you know, one or two more for a team like the Twins are fighting for the, you know, that AL Central division right now. So I would not be surprised if, you know, one or two more bad outings and they make a switch there, because they also went out and got Michael Fulmer. Pagan's been pitching better lately. Duran has been great. He's been outstanding. Griffin Jacks has pitched well. So like they have some other options there. So if Lopez isn't cutting it, there's no need for them to just keep him in that closer role just because, you know, they traded for a closer, quote unquote.
There's also something to say about wanting to have him maintain his confidence, and that this will be part of the big crux of the podcast where we talk about reliever limitations throughout the final month and a half. But this is a guy who has been, put it nicely, he's been terrible throughout his whole career, and he's finally figured things out. And I think it's important for relievers to maintain confidence, especially going into the playoffs. So they probably don't want him to have five or so blow ups heading into October as a team that has not gone deep into the postseason for a long time. So I think it's important for them to use him wisely. And if that requires taking him out of the role to turn to any of the number of other relievers that they could easily turn to that have experience in the role as well, then they should probably do that. But
I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say, like, just thinking about the Red Sox last year, and Matt Barnes was the closer at this time last year. And then, you know, he didn't even make the ALDS roster or the ALCS roster. So, like, you know, it's a lot can change still from now and then. And like, you don't want to just completely, you know, destroy a pitcher's confidence. And you got to make sure that they're on the right track for, you know, well, for the Twins, they need to get into the playoffs first, but at the same time, they also need to make sure their guys are, you know, pitching in their best, the best spots to keep them, keep their momentum going.
Oh, wow. They're one game back of the Guardians now. So
yeah,
they really do need to make it into the postseason. I don't even know if they're in wild card. They're out of it. They're one game out of the wild card too. Yeah.
The AL Central is pretty much could be a just three team race, and whoever wins the Central, that's it. That's the only AL Central team that gets in. So
yeah. So maybe they'll be counting on him pretty heavily throughout the last month and a half, but he's really going to need to step it up a little. I don't think he's been absolutely horrible since coming over, but he has allowed runs in like, looks like in two of the outings he's pitched in so far. Not too terrible from Lopez, but it's not looking perfect. It's not looking perfect right now. And that's sort of what it looked like for the first half. Somebody else that has not been perfect all season, who sort of needs to get things figured out, is Craig Kimbrel of the Dodgers. And I sort of did a little deep dive on him in my reliever ranks last night that went up on Thursday. And Kimbrel is moving down your chart as well. So what is the main reason you have for knocking him down? I mean, I know I have some ideas myself, but I want to hear what you have to say.
It's just, it's been consistently inconsistent. And I feel like it's funny. He hasn't, I don't know where his actual, what his ranking actually is at this point, but I feel like he's always on this down list, and he's still 18. Okay. Like, I'm still holding out hope. I feel like he's close to turning the corner, but he keeps, there's just too many walks. There's too many hits allowed. He just can't not. He's allowed, you probably know, he's allowed base runners, I think, in the last, like, it's got to be almost close to a record at this point. He's just allowing base runners in every single game he pitches, which is not what you want from a closer. And he's been getting lucky that most of these times he comes into the game, they have more than a one run lead. So that's kind of bailing him out. I think I heard today that his save the other night was the first save he had all year that was only a one run lead. So like, he's
really,
yeah. So he's been getting lucky that if those games were one run games, I'm sure he'd be out of the role by now. But I don't know. Dave Roberts still wants to get him right. He wants him to be their closer when it comes to October, and they have time to make sure that, you know, they won the NL West. It's pretty much, we can call it now. So they have time to get him right. And whatever that is, if that means to give him some time off, that means to pitch him in more low leverage situations for now, and then work him back into high leverage situations. They have time to do that. But from a fantasy standpoint, it might be a little all erratic as far as his usage goes and how much he's actually going to be able to help you.
Definitely. You mentioned that it's been a while since he had a clean outing, meaning no base runners. Yeah. The last time he didn't allow a base runner in an outing was July 13th. Oh my gosh. That is a long, that was 2 months. That was a month
and
ago.
And even looking like before that, there's like not a lot of clean outings.
It's been all season. It's hard to just all blame it on him though. What I wrote about last night was that he's been unlucky, but also he's deserved some of this poor results because he has a 388 BABIP, which is reminiscent of what like Lou Trevino is doing now in New York, where he's just had a crazy BABIP, and it just, while his skills are a lot better. And he also has a 66% left on base rate, which is not good, which is very unlucky. So both of those point to him being really unlucky. And that's why he has an ERA that's closing in on 4.5, but he also has a career low 28.7% strikeout rate and a 3.9% home run to fly ball rate. So he's getting pretty lucky on the home runs, and he's not striking nearly as many guys out as he used to. He used to be like a 40% strikeout guy, and he is definitely not doing that anymore. So there's a lot of things that he's sort of contributing himself that's making him have a poor season, but also there's some luck. So I think it's a mix of both, and you're right. The Dodgers need to figure something out I have trust in them as much as I don't want them to figure things out as a Giants fan. I have trust in that organization. They have some of the best coaching in all of baseball, and I think they'll be able to figure out what's wrong with him, what needs to be done to get him right. And if they do, he was a Hall of Famer in the first half of his career, so they should be able to get something out of him. And it's going to be really important to do that before the playoffs, because they're going to be counting on him big time in October.
They're going to need to. They didn't go out and really make any big moves for relievers, so it's Kimbrel or Bob. I mean, unless we see Evan Phillips become their closer in the playoffs.
Well, Trinan's going to be back soon.
True. Gratterall's coming back too, but I don't know. As we've seen, even with like Kenley Jansen was the closer there forever, and when he struggled in the playoffs, they shied away from him. So, you know, I feel like Kimbrel might end up being a luxury for them if, you know, Trinan comes back healthy and Gratterall and the rest of those guys continue pitching well, other than Kimbrel.
Yeah, and Roberts just loves having the confidence in those veteran closers. So if you're owning him in your fantasy leagues, there's definitely no reason to drop him right now. I think he's going to be the closer through the end of the season. It just might come with its ups and downs, as it has all season. So now that we've covered the ups and downs of Kimbrel's season, as well as the ups and downs of your closing time article, it's time to move on to the notable news. And we're going to be covering stuff from the past 2 weeks, since we missed a couple episodes to say the least. We've got a couple injuries to cover, a couple major injuries, as well as a situation that has surprisingly turned into a closing situation, but also not surprisingly at all. So let's start with the injuries. The first one that happened literally, like, that was right after the deadline, right? David Bednar going on the IL. I'm at a loss of remembrance of what he landed on the IL with. There we go. You got it. All right. You tell me what's going on in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so I don't think he's throwing yet. He's working his way back with, you know, doing light cardio stuff. Will Crow is technically the closer there. Pirates aren't winning a ton of games right now, so how many saves he winds up getting is, you know, anyone's guess, but I still like Will. I like Will Crow. We've talked about him a little bit before. He's definitely been one of the more underrated relievers, you know, pitching on a bad team this year. So Crow's worth an add in most leagues, and I don't know. We'll talk again, talking about reliever limitations later. I don't know if Bednar is going to be rushed back, because what's the point for the Pirates?
Yeah, he was really great all season, and yeah, there's really no point for the Pirates to do anything weird, because they are out of contention. Yeah. Crow has been very good by himself all season, so they have enough guys to turn to there. Yuri De Los Santos is also on the IL. I think he's on the 60-day IL, so he's done for as well. It's good to see that the Pirates have been able to turn out some good relievers, because they've been known to not have the best pitching development, to say the least, with Garrett Cole leaving and Charlie Morton and Clay Holmes, obviously, Musgrove. Yeah, just like so many guys that have come there and not reached their fullest potential. So it's been nice to see them get the most out of Bednar and turn Will Crow from a starter into a shutdown reliever, and get a lot out of a young guy like De Los Santos. And also, I mean, they've acquired Colin Holderman, and they've turned unknown guys like, I don't know, Chase DeJong has been incredible this year. So they seem to be turning things around in the pitching development department, at least in the bullpen. So that's been nice to see. But yeah, Bednar, they have no reason to rush him back. He's been so incredible. They have no reason to do so, especially if they want to compete in the next couple of years. They probably will want him in the ninth inning and healthy. And he's a big guy. So, you know, you gotta keep those guys healthy, because their bodies can break down a lot faster than, you know, the guys who are more athletic and skinnier.
Especially the back injuries can linger. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you don't want to rush that back. You want to make sure that he's 100% before he returns.
Definitely. And I did just mention him, but a guy who moved out of Pittsburgh to the Yankees, who has turned into one of the best relievers in baseball, but has struggled for a month or so now, a few weeks or so. Clay Holmes landed on the 10-day IL. I'm once again add a blank for what he got injured with, but I'm sure you got me covered there.
I did think it was back spasms for him. Oh, yeah.
No, you're right. I wrote that up. I wrote that up in the leading up part of the reliever ranks. But yeah, that's a pretty disappointing, especially for a lot of fantasy managers that have been counting on him all season, especially for the Yankees. But you know, at least they got Aroldis Chapman back. Do you think Clay Holmes is just going to be out and then, you know, come back and sort of be eased back into the bullpen? And so they just, they sort of like keep his workload light through the rest of the season so that he can be at full strength for the postseason? Or do you think it's going to be like Yankees are scrapping to get that number one spot in the American League, just even though that doesn't really matter at this point with the new playoff format?
I think the way you're the option one is what I'm gonna go with because they need to make sure they're going to be, they're going to win the AL East still. They're struggling now, but I still pretty confident in saying that they're going to win the AL East. And it's a little bit painful to say that, but that's what it is. So I think that they need to make sure the number one goal for them right now is to make sure that he is back to where he was at the start of the season for come playoff time, because they're going to need to rely on him a lot. Even as well, Aroldis Chapman's pitching better lately. He didn't pitch that great the other night, but leading up to that, he has been looking better. And I think it's time to see, can he move back into the closer role that, you know, they're used to with him. And as long as he can work the, in that role, and then, you know, Efros is going to be a big factor. He might even, I could see him sharing some save opportunities with Chapman too for the time being. But either way, they're going to still need Holmes healthy for the playoffs, or they're going to be in real trouble, because it gets really dicey after. I mean, even with Chapman and Efros, it's not exactly shut down. You know, we're not talking shut down relievers right now. Chapman has been in the past, but definitely not this year. So yeah, the number one thing they need to, and I don't know how bad this back injury is. It could, you know, people were calling it a phantom IL stint, which who knows, but whatever it takes, whatever it's going to take to get him right, they need to make sure they do that.
I could definitely see them doing exactly what I was saying before, where they just, you know, sort of ease him through the rest of the season, because it did sort of seem like a phantom IL stint, because they were sort of waiting to put him on the IL. He was like injured for 4 days and they didn't put him on the IL immediately. So it seemed like they were going to try to push through it. And then either they came to a realization like, hey, we don't need to push him right now, or it got worse and wasn't getting better. And they were like, okay, we need to shut you down for a little. But yeah, like you said, they're going to need him in the postseason. They're going to make the postseason, and it's going to be really important that he's healthy and 100%. And so, yeah, I think they're just going to ease him through the rest of the season. But man, that bullpen has just been destroyed by injuries all season. Losing Chad Green, Michael King, that was terrible. They had lost Zach Britton before the season started, and now Clay Holmes and Aroldis Chapman was out for a while. Loaisiga was out for a while. It's been good that they added Efros and Trevino, but yeah, it's been really hard for them to recover from a lot of these injuries. But they've figured things out, and it looks like they're going to come out on the winning side of that tunnel. So.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine if that bullpen was everyone was healthy there?
Oh my god, no! I do not put those nightmares in my brain. I think it's common knowledge that only Yankees fans like the Yankees, so everybody else is like, I don't want. I mean, especially you, but yeah, I mean, I think everybody else is like, I do not want to see that bullpen at full strength. That would be absolutely nightmarish. And I mean, I think that's a possibility that they have that next year, right? No, Aroldis is a free agent. Britton's probably going to be one soon. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That'll be fun to cover in the offseason.
Green's probably not going to be back till later in the year. But yeah,
very true.
Oh, he might be a free agent too. I think he's a free agent, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll have more than enough time to cover that in the offseason, that's for sure. But yeah, that's definitely keep your eye on Clay Holmes. I mean, this is a tough question, because they do have Aroldis Chapman there. If you're a Clay Holmes owner and you don't have IL slots, or your IL slots are full, you're playing in an NFBC league where there is no IL, are you dropping him? Are you considering that at all in like a 10 or a 12 teamer?
Yes, I think I would.
Yeah, just because they'd have no reason to push him through the last month and a half.
And yeah, especially this late in the year when we talk about injuries, it's like it has to be someone really special to hold on to. And like, if you're not if he's not guaranteed the closing role, then yeah, I'd move on.
And he's struggled so much over the last couple of weeks or so. And I mean, that could be a result of that injury, but also it's like, I don't know, this is his breakout season. He was really good last season, but this is his big breakout. So you can't really consider it that it's going to go for the whole season. He's going to have some regression. Maybe that's hitting him now. But yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think if you're, especially in a 10-teamer, you let him go, especially if you don't have an IL, let him go, because they've got enough guys there to cover for him while he's out. And also, they have no reason to rush him back. In other injury news, sticking in the AL East, we got Tanner Houck landing on the IL. That was pretty soon after the deadline as well, about a week after that. And he was sharing the closer role with Garrett Whitlock. Do you think that Houck is going to be able to return at some point and still have and still factor into the closer role in the final month and a half? Or is it just going to be like Whitlock and Schreiber for the rest of the season? And also, I mean, I'll ask you this one after. Go ahead.
It's not sounding great as far as him returning. Again, these closers and their back issues. I don't know what that's all about. But yeah, it's doesn't look great. And I don't think he's far from guaranteed getting any save chances when he comes back, not just because of Garrett Whitlock and Schreiber, but Matt Barnes is back and he's pitching well. He got a save this week, and I don't know what to make of that yet. But
yeah,
this is a Pirates, so it's, you know, what it is. But Barnes is back pitching well. They're starting to trust him again. So yeah, I think Houck's kind of a, if he returns, it's kind of a luxury at this point.
Yeah, definitely. I wrote in one of my reliever ranks this week that it's sort of it's almost a shame that Matt Barnes is back and like in the closer role after that whole first half where he just like sort of let so many people down, because he was one of those guys where the bullpen was sort of up in the air and Matt Barnes was everybody's savior for the Red Sox or for people looking for saves. And especially for me, I had him for a while and he was just absolutely horrible. And he just couldn't figure out how to pitch. I don't know what was going on. And he was on the IL for like a couple months or something, a month at least. And now he's back factoring into a bullpen that has finally seemed to figure itself out. And it's like, oh, now you're going to be good. Come on, bro. Like, we needed you the whole first month. That might have the first couple of months of the season. Yeah. So it's almost disappointing. That's like, come on, Barnes. Like, we could have used you in the first couple months of the season. And now we've got Whitlock and Schreiber down there. We don't really need you anymore, but now you're just going to muddy the waters even more.
Yeah. I'm ready to get hurt again with Barnes. I don't know. We'll see. It's been a good month for him so far. I don't know. I need to see a little bit more before I get really like excited, but so far so good since he's been back.
Yeah. Well, the last bit of news we've got, and this is going to be a shorter one because this bullpen isn't too fantasy relevant. The Diamondbacks have finally taken the reins away from Mark Melancon. Not completely, though, as they are turning to what FanGraphs roster resources considering a 3-man closer committee, although I think it's more of a 2-man job between Mark Melancon and Ian Kennedy, because Joe Mantiply is in that, according to FanGraphs, but I don't think he is going to be factoring in as much as the other two. They seem to be switching off sort of in the same vein as what Houck and Whitlock were doing before Houck's injury. Do you think that either of those guys are fantasy relevant now that they're like splitting save opportunities? Because neither of them have been that amazing this season. I mean, Kennedy's not been horrible, but he's not a shutdown closer. He doesn't strike out a ton of guys. And Melancon is very iffy even when he's the lone closer. Do you have any thoughts about the new closing committee in Arizona?
Not really. I don't know. Melancon's been pitching better lately, I guess, but I feel like it's just too late to get, I don't know. I guess if you're in like deeper roto leagues where you need to make up some saves, or you need to hold if you're like the top of the, you know, save leaderboard, but people are right behind you and you just need to, you know, make sure you win that category, then I guess these are the types of guys you have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in any sort of like head to head or points league, I wouldn't look. If you're looking at anyone, I would be. I think Mantiply might be like the just safe, you know, option where he's not going to wreck your ratios and provide you some Ks.
Definitely. Both Melanson and Kennedy were sort of already fringe guys if they were the closer by themselves. And now the fact that they're splitting time while still not, you know, being super shut down or anything, it's sort of hard to buy into those guys in 12 and 10 team league. So those are definitely guys to consider in 15 teamers, but maybe any shallower than that, it might be time to move on, especially if they try to factor Mantiply into the ninth more as well. So that's going to cover the first half of the podcast, covering the movers and shakers and the closer ranks, as well as the news from the past couple of weeks. So before we cover the limitations that we might see from relievers over the next month and a half, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back. My name is Jake Crumpler. You can call me Crump if you know too many Jakes. And as always, I'm joined by Rick Graham. We're both a pitcher list, and we're about to cover the relievers that may have limitations to their workloads or to their usage over the final month and a half, whether that be because of a litany of innings that they've pitched through the 2022 season that hasn't been matched at any other point in their career, or in the case of some other guys that we've mentioned, giving them a rest so that they can be at their best for the playoffs. We're going to start by covering a couple relievers in the NL West that we've already talked about. And the first one that we probably don't have much more to say anymore, and we've already talked about him, but Josh Hader, who I mentioned before, has not pitched since last Tuesday, and just like doesn't seem to be at the forefront of the Padres bullpen. I mean, he's clearly the closer still there, but they're not like itching to get him a maintenance inning so that he's warmed up for whatever closing situation that comes up next. And it just seems like they're doing their best to limit his workload so that he can be at his best for the postseason. Do you have any further thoughts than what we've already said?
Not really. I mean, I will say that San Diego it would be embarrassing if they don't make the playoffs, like after all the moves they made. And yeah, and even with the whole Tatis thing,
don't get me started.
They're still talented enough to make the playoffs. So, you know, they're 1.5 games up on Milwaukee for the final wild card spot. So they do have a little bit of they can't just kind of sit back and, you know, relax here. They do need to play well down the stretch. So they're going to need to trust Hader, and whatever it takes to get him ready, they need to do. And we just, you know, they haven't pitched him for a week and a half now. So if that happens, you know, if they need to give him more time off, then I'm sure they'll do it. And it's just going to hurt for, you know, everyone who has him in fantasy.
They just don't have that many other options there. I think this could just be like the time that they're choosing to rest him, because he's been struggling for so long. Like I said, 9 ERA over his last 19 innings pitched. And this just might be the perfect time for them to be like, okay, we're going to let you rest for a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then we're just going ham. We're going ham through September and through the playoffs, and we're just going to be relying on you for the rest of the season. And you know, like you said, they're definitely going to have to. It's going to be an interesting race to see the Brewers and the Padres face off after that big trade that they had at the deadline. So, yeah, that's definitely one to keep an eye on. But I think we're both in agreement that they're going to need to use him. So they can't really just let him coast through the end of the season because they're not guaranteed to make the playoffs. Another team in the NL West and another closer that we've already talked about, the Dodgers have Craig Kimbrel, and they're locked up in first place. We pretty much said everything there is to say here, but you know, they haven't really rested Kimbrel throughout the season. I mean, he hasn't thrown a ton of innings. I think he's at 42 and a third innings, which isn't crazy. There are some relievers over 50 right now, but that's a pretty normal amount. But there is a possibility that, like we were saying before, he's been struggling so much. Like, do they want to rest him so that he can just be good for the postseason? I mean, they could. To be honest, they could sit him out for the next month and he'd be fine. And if that's what's best for him, that's what they need to do. Do you think that's a possibility that they keep him out for like a two weeks or whatever? Or do you think they want to get him his confidence back so that he can be at his best in the postseason?
That's the question. Yeah, that's a great question that I'm interested to see how they, you know, do this now with Trinan coming back. So I'm thinking maybe when Blake Trinan comes back, they, I don't know, maybe not, you know, IL Kimbrel, but maybe they just, you know, give him a couple days off to kind of, or a couple weeks off to basically reset, get himself right mentally. And then, you know, towards the middle end of September, you know, get him back ramped up again and ready for the playoffs. Because I mean, the Dodgers have a little bit of a luxury here being 16 and a half games up, and they should, I don't think, what are they up on the Mets? They should have the, I mean, they should be all set with having the number one seed. So they can really do the, whatever, you know, Kimbrel thinks is best, whatever Dave Roberts and the rest of the organization thinks is best to get him right, that they're going to do. And yeah, it's just kind of from our standpoint, we just got to wait and see what that is. If it's to give him some time off, then I'm sure they will.
Yeah, that's another spot to keep an eye on, because it's really unclear what they're going to do with him, but they definitely need to try something different right now because he's not been having the best season. And like we already said, they're going to want him at his best for the postseason. So a few more relievers that are going to be limited, maybe because of a different reason, not because of their effectiveness or because of their need to be at the best in the postseason. All of these guys are on contending teams, but it's mostly because they've been pitching a lot this season compared to recent seasons. We're going to start with Felix Bautista, who took over the closer role in Baltimore when Jorge Lopez got traded to the Twins. And he has been pitching a lot more than he has ever had. And he's a big guy, like we talked about with David Bednar. He's a really big guy.
Yeah. But,
yeah, so they might need to keep holding back, and they really don't seem like they are on the verge of making the playoffs. Like, there's still a chance, but you know, they're not as locked in as the Dodgers and the Yankees and stuff. So they don't really have any reason to push him more than they already have. What do you see going on with Bautista, and why, what are the stats backing up that he is sort of at his limit right now?
Yeah, this is one of the ones that when you brought up this topic, I kind of blew me away, is that he threw 46 and two thirds innings last year in the minor leagues. And before that, his highest inning total since he started in professional baseball in 2013 was 67 innings in 2017. But that was because he made 14 starts. Other than that, he had never gone over 36 innings, 27 innings, 6.2 innings, 0.12.1, 0.26.1. I mean, so he's at 50 innings now, which is the second most of his career for a year. And it's, it hasn't shown yet. He's still been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if he's able to get through this, and they're only two games out of the wild card spot here. So, and they also have, I think, perhaps the hardest schedule going forward. So if he's able to, you know, make it through this, continue to pitch well, excel and be one of the better relievers in baseball, I think we're talking about a possible top five or six closer, you know, when we're looking at early rankings for next season. If he can get through this and healthy, and the innings don't prove to be too much for him, I think, which, you know, you talk about a big guy, I think that might help potentially in this case. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exactly positive on all the, you know, injury background with him and why he hasn't thrown a lot of innings. So, yeah, I think it's something to definitely monitor at this point. You're not dropping him, or, you know, most trade deadlines are over for fantasy reasons. So it's just something to, you know, keep an eye on if he starts to, you know, struggle and he's starting to look a little fatigued, missing spots, velos down, stuff like that.
Definitely. They just have no reason to push him too hard. And he throws so hard, which probably doesn't take a lot of effort with his frame. But you just don't want a guy this late in the season on a team that's probably not going to go deep into the playoffs, even if they do make it, to push himself and, I don't know, end up with Tommy John surgery. I don't want to jinx him like that. But, like, it can literally just happen on any pitch, you know? Especially when you're throwing 99, 100 miles per hour. It's just anything can happen at any point, and there's just no reason for them to push him right now. And like you said, he could be one of the most appealing guys to draft next season. So I think we want what's best for him, and that would sort of be limiting his workload through the end of the season. Workload. That's what I call my boss. No, I'm joking. but he's definitely someone to monitor right now, like you said, because, you know, I mean, like you said, he's at the point in the season where it's like, now you would expect him to start falling off, and he hasn't. And so if he can continue doing that, then you don't have any worries about dropping him. But I could definitely see the Orioles limiting him just so that they don't have to worry about him getting injured, something that could affect him for next year, or just pushing him too hard. And so, yeah, I mean, that's about all there is to say about Felix Bautista. Another guy to consider in the workload limitation department is Sir Anthony Dominguez of the Philadelphia Phillies. He has really taken over the closer role in Philadelphia since Knebel got taken out of it, but also even after the deadline when they acquired David Robertson. I think everybody thought it was going to be a committee, and it's really just been Dominguez getting all the saves, which sort of surprised me because I thought it was going to be clearly Robertson, but Dominguez is beginning everything. And he is one who has recently returned from an injury. Was it Tommy John surgery?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he just really is not pitched. He's really not pitched over the last three seasons at all. I think he's already pitched more innings than he has in the last three seasons combined. So he's definitely nearing the end of that, but like the Phillies are still in contention. They're still trying to pitch in the playoffs. So maybe they're trying to use him up now so then they can turn to David Robertson and Brad Hand in September and the rest of August, while Dominguez sort of rests up for the postseason, because you really don't want to push guys too hard after Tommy John surgery, but they're sort of at a lower risk of injury, is what I remember from like studies and stuff, that like after somebody gets Tommy John surgery, they're sort of at a lower risk of getting re-injured within like the first year of coming back. But I'm not totally sure about that. What are your thoughts on Sir Anthony Dominguez's workload?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about shutting him down, but yeah, it's very like 13.1 innings last year. 2020, he didn't pitch at all. He was coming back from Tommy John, and in 2019, he only threw 24.2 innings. So, you know, now he's at 44 for the season, which, like you said, is more than what he had the past three seasons combined. So for a team that is in that wild card mix that needs to, you know, pretty much play to win every single day from here on out, it's going to be interesting to see how they manage his innings. And I think this is why I think he's staying in the closer role, because he's, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it type of deal. And he's been so good this year. But this is why they got Robertson, because they probably realized that they probably weren't going to be able to rely on him for the next 2 months to go out there and, you know, pitch back to back days, or, you know, to just run him into the ground. So I'm sure, you know, he's still, I don't know how many years left he has on until he reaches free agency, but he's still young. He's still in his 20s. He still has like a good career ahead of him. So they don't want to push him too hard right now. And so something to monitor, but I don't think there's been any talk of shutting him down or limiting his appearances yet, as far as I know.
It's definitely something to consider, though, because, I mean, that's just so jarring how little he's pitched over the last three seasons. He's not a free agent until 2025, so he's still got two more years after this season. But the Phillies, as many people know that follow fantasy baseball or just follow the Phillies or bullpen specifically, the Phillies has been like just a graveyard for relief pitchers, except for this season. They've really turned it around in that department, but they have a long, long history of just not being able to find anybody in the closer role. And if Dominguez is the guy that they can count on, like you said, they're going to want to keep him healthy, especially if he can be around to solidify that bullpen for the next couple of seasons. So they definitely don't want to push him too hard and risk re-injuring him in some sort of way. But yeah, he's been incredible this season. So I'd love to see him continue what he's been doing, but David Robertson is just you know, he's really good, and he's a veteran that's going to be a free agent after this season, so they can work him down to the bone, and it's not really going to affect them in the future. Another bullpen situation that's going to be worth to consider, especially because it's another situation where the team has other guys they can turn to, is in St. Louis, where Ryan Helsley is having an incredible breakout season and has been helping my home league team all year long. That was my best pickup of the season. Just randomly got him, and then he threw 103 miles an hour. I was like, whoa, so where did that come from? But it was a great surprise, and I've been glad to see it. But yeah, I mean, this is another guy who's just thrown a lot more innings than he ever has. He was sort of an unheralded reliever. And I remember in the first few months of the season, even when I came on as a guest for the first time on the podcast, we talked about how Helsley wasn't being used on back-to-back days ever. They were really limiting his workload. And that sort of waned in the second half of the season as the Cardinals have taken over first place in the NL Central. And he just continues to be super effective. He's got the lowest ERA in baseball. I think that's like even a minimum of 30 innings pitched or something. He's been really, really good. He's striking out 40% of batters. He hasn't slowed down one bit. I mean, he's even allowed 2 runs this month, and that's like his worst month of the season, which is bonkers. But yeah, he's really pushing the limits on his workload, and it's hard to tell, you know, if the Cardinals are going to turn to maybe Giovanni Gallegos, who is been a closer in the past. He's been one of their most reliable relievers for the past 3 seasons or so. And Helsley is another one of those guys that's throwing 100 plus miles per hour. And that's always makes people nervous when it comes to surgeries and that kind of stuff, as we see Jacob deGrom just like not being able to stay healthy because he throws so hard. So what are your thoughts on Ryan Helsley and the situation in St. Louis?
It's similar to Philadelphia, but I think Helsley's a little bit more probably, I bet you he's got a better chance to have no limitations going forward, because he was able to, you know, he did have 47 innings last year. He had 12 in 2020. So he's had injury. He's got a injury history too. That's pretty extensive, but I don't think that this is someone who's going to get, you know, limited or shut down. But it is worth, yeah, like this. I think it was worth mentioning because of Gallegos being an option there, and the Cardinals are pretty, I don't say they're safe, but I mean, yeah, what do they have? They have a lead. What's their lead over the
three?
I
think they're three games
over Milwaukee. So yeah, that's still too close to call. So yeah, they're probably gonna ride him, you know, until the wheels fall off, and they're gonna need him and Gallegos, because the rest of that bullpen is still a little bit hit or miss. You know what they have there, so it's definitely, I thought maybe he had pitched less innings the past couple years, but yeah, I think it's not something to be too concerned with yet, but definitely someone who I think the Cardinals now see as a potential, you know, piece for them moving forward that they want to take care of though. So
Definitely. And he's still got 3 more years of control. I think it's just like, yeah, they have other guys to turn to. So it's like, just keep that in the back of your head that there is a possibility that they sort of limit him. Like maybe go back to the usage that he had in the first couple of months where they don't use him on back-to-back days and stuff, because not only do they need him for the rest of the season to hold off the Brewers, but they're going to need him in the playoffs because, I mean, that bullpen, they don't have anybody else outside of him and Gallegos. I mean, not to like talk bad of any of their other closers, but they have not had the best bullpen all season, and it's really been solidified by Helsley, so they're going to be counting on him all season, all rest of the season and the postseason as well. So that is definitely going to be something to not let surprise you if you're an owner of him in fantasy leagues. The last member of a contending team that could possibly be limited is another guy that we already talked about, and that's Jorge Lopez. This is a guy who was a starter before, but you never really know what's going on with it with a guy like this, especially since we talked about he's moving down the reliever ranks just slight, or the closing charts just slightly, and he's never pitched in this many games in a season because he was a starter before. So it's more like he does have the workload innings wise, but not in sort of game wise, which is pretty interesting. And then also in that same bullpen, Yoan Duran is a young player who has been limited all season, even more so than Helsley was in the first couple months. They don't even want to use him in the closer role because they want to limit him so much. And so both of those guys are going to be pretty interesting to watch through the second half. And you had mentioned prior to us reaching this segment that they also have Michael Fulmer and Pagan there who could take over the role, either the ninth inning or the setup role, because they have a history of doing that. They've been much better recently, and they haven't been absolutely terrible throughout the whole season. I mean, especially Fulmer. Fulmer has been great. But yeah, you got any thoughts on the Minnesota Twins bullpen?
Pretty much covered it. I think when we talked about this topic, I thought I would add Jorge Lopez, just because I think it's interesting, just the mindset of, you know, yes, he's thrown 100 innings in multiple seasons before, but appearing in 50 games, you know, getting up, like getting hot, getting loose, like, you know, throwing at, you know, full max, you know, whatever you want to call it, max effort for more than, he's never appeared in more than 39 games in a season. And now he's at 40 for this, or he's at 50 for the season now, I think. Wow. So, you know, we're getting to the, I feel like that might, the innings definitely are limited, but the appearances, I feel like, could take a toll on someone who's not used to, you know, getting up and throwing 50 times a year. So something to keep an eye on for him. And same, with Duran, he's only threw 16 innings last year.
And he's been off injured throughout his minor league career as well.
Yes, yeah. So something to keep an eye on, because they're really working him. I mean, they're trusting him in big spots, and he's, I don't know what his innings are at now, but I think they're close to, or possibly over. I was gonna say they're probably over 50. Yeah. So yeah, that's what do you do if you're the Twins? You know when you're battling for the the AL Central, and you got to make decisions on someone like him who's got a huge, you know, bright future ahead of him.
Exactly.
They're probably going to play it safe. So for those you and holds leagues, and the same thing goes for Andrés Muñoz in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to, he threw 4.1 innings last year, none in 2020. So it's like, they're going to play that thing safe. They're going to play that safe with him. He's only 23 years old, I think. So he's their future either closer or, you know, stud high leverage reliever. So, and they have other options in Seattle. They don't need, like, he's been so good, but they don't need to push him. And I'm sure they'd rather him be healthy for a potential playoff push. So look for him to possibly get, you know, less work moving on from, you know, the rest of this month and through September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's already doubled his career high in innings pitched, whether that be in the minors or the majors. His career high is 23, and he's already at 48. So definitely something to keep an eye on with Munoz. He's just been so crazy this year. And as for Duran, he's been just as good, you could say, as Munoz. But he's sort of in the same boat as Lopez in that he was a starter throughout the minor leagues. He literally never... He didn't start one game in his final season in the minor leagues last season. And so he's sort of in that vein of Josh Hader, in that he was like a starter throughout his entire minor league career. And then immediately upon his debut, he's thrust into the bullpen. Yeah, exactly. And then becomes an ace. And so, I mean, that bodes well for his future, is that he's going to be, you know, a shutdown guy and probably won't be turned into a closer because he's had so much turned into a starter because he's had so much success. But yeah, it is worth it to consider, like, this guy's never tossed more than, he's never appeared in more than 16 games in a season. No, that's wrong. 23 in a season. And now he's at 44. So it's sort of the same boat as Lopez, but those are definitely a couple more guys to watch. And before we close things out, we've just got a couple more teams to cover that aren't really in contention. So this is sort of the same thing as we talked about with Bednar and other teams, the Diamondbacks, the Yankees and stuff, where it's like some of those teams are in contention, but they've locked things up, and some teams are just out of contention. So we talked about it with Bautista. I was trying to figure out who else we talked about. But yeah, it's just like teams that have no reason to be pushing closers or young relievers at this point in the season, because there's nothing really to play for. And, you know, you're going to need them in the future. So let's start out in Texas, where Jose Leclerc and Jonathan Hernandez have just recently returned from Tommy John surgery and are now looking to be current key members of the bullpen as well as future key members of the bullpen. And Joe Barlow just came back as well. So what do you think of that situation over there? Are they going to be turning to Barlow more often to take the load off Hernandez and Leclerc in their return? Or do you think it's just, you know, let him go, let him see how the arm's feeling?
Yeah, I had originally thought that with Barlow coming back, he would probably wouldn't factor into the closer situation that much. But now I wonder if, you know, they just fired their manager, their baseball head of baseball operations. Clearly, it's, you know, a lost season for them. So with, you know, Hernandez and Leclerc both coming back from Tommy John this year, there's no real there's no need for them to go out and, you know, put them into high leverage spots in the end of September. So perhaps they get their workload gets slowed down a little bit towards the end of the year and Joe Barlow works his way back, and or they could just throw Matt Moore out there for save chances, because why not? I think it could be turn into a messy situation. I still like Jonathan Hernandez, and Leclerc's looked good lately, so I like those two guys, but I just, you know, gotta wonder if they're gonna throw more than, if they're going to throw double digit innings in September this year.
It definitely seems like it's going to be some sort of closer committee in September just to keep the load off everyone. But I just picked up Hernandez in my home league, so I'm hoping that they rely on him at least a little bit so I can get a few saves. But it's looking like my reign in that home league is coming to an end. I might lose for the first time in the past 4 years. It's fine. You know, got to give some other people a chance to win.
Yeah,
it's selfish of me. But yeah, we talked about Bednar already this season. But yeah, is there any reason to rush him back at this point in the season when they have other guys they can turn to like Will Crow, and they have, you know, no playoff hopes and they want to contend in the near future? Do you think that they rush him back, and do you think that he is going to be, you know, I don't know, racking up a bunch of saves in September?
I doubt it. There's really no reason for it. And that back injury too, he's been kind of battling it off and on throughout the year. So just
it, like, seemed like he slowed down the past like month before he went on the IL.
Yeah. So just take your time, be cautious with him. No, absolutely no reason to rush him back, and be interesting to see, you know, give Will Crow the next month and a half, see what, how he responds, see how well he handles that situation. And, you know, you go into next year, hopefully with two, at least you can rely on those two guys to give you the eighth and the ninth inning. And then you just got to get to there. But that's going to be a challenge for them to get to that spot. But, you know, hey, making progress there. And just make sure Bednar is healthy for the beginning of next year. That's all that's
matter. Yeah, definitely. Please, Pirates, don't mess this up. Another NL Central team is the Reds, where they have Alexis Diaz, the younger brother of Edwin Diaz. He's been great all season, but this is another situation where the Reds are completely out of contention. Do they have any reason to continue pushing him? He's already at 46 and a third innings, and he's got a 1.75 ERA and basically a 34% strikeout rate. Just a really great season. Great breakout. It's crazy. If we see the two best closers in baseball at some point being brothers, that would be so sick. But yeah, what do you think the Reds are going to do for the rest of the season with him?
Yeah, I'm torn on this because I love, he's awesome. He's fun to watch. I love, like, I have him on a few teams. I want him to close out games, but at the same time, like, the Reds just, you know, Joey Votto just decided to have surgery to end his season so he could be ready for next year. And I think whatever it takes to make sure that Alexis Diaz is, you know, 100% for the start of next season, you do that. And, you know, who knows how many save chances they're actually going to end up getting, because they're a little banged up right now, or beat up, you know, with that roster construction. So as far as I'm looking at it, like, Diaz is, he threw 42 innings last year, 57 in 2019. So he can handle the workload, but I think, you know, pushing him to like 60 innings would be a lot for what is a lost year. So yeah, he might, they might slow him down a little bit, and hopefully they can get, I don't know what happened to Lucas Sims. He kind of just disappeared. There's some talented arms in that bullpen that if it would be fun to see, you know, Diaz, if Art Warren can get back to where he was last year, you know, Sims and TJ Anton come back, like that could be a fun little bullpen to look forward to next year.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think a lot of people were counting on that bullpen throughout the season for save opportunities, and it just never really went to one guy. So yeah, let's hope they make the right decision, and that would lead to Hunter Strickland getting a lot more saves in the final month or so. So keep an eye there. In a more lighthearted note, do you think Diaz is going to get his own walk-in music? And if his brother's is trumpets, what do you think Diaz is, or Alexis is going to be?
I think the only thing that can match a trumpet is you got to get like a cool saxophone song. Something. Yeah, I don't know what that is. I mean, I have some options, but yeah, he's got to come up with his own to match his brother's. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to find the PR department or whatever for Cincinnati and just start emailing them some saxophone songs and be like, all right, yeah, you guys got to get ahead of this right now while you've got the opportunity before someone steals your song. But yeah, the last situation to look at is Arizona and Colorado. We talked about Arizona already, so we'll skip that one. But Colorado is completely out of playoff contention, and they did just extend their 37-year-old closer for some reason. They do be doing stuff like that often. But Daniel Bard is sort of in the same situation as Hader right now, as he hasn't pitched in a week as well. And do you think they sort of limit him through the rest of the season? I mean, you know, they sort of have stuff invested in him for the future, so there's no reason to push him too hard over the last month and a half, and they've already started limiting him a little. Do you think they'll continue to do so, or do you think they're just going to pull a Rockies and be like, oh, I didn't even, never even thought about that?
Yeah, this actually makes the most sense. Is there's no reason. They should just kind of sit down Bard for the rest of the year. If he's coming back next year, then there's not a lot to win. There's no reason for him to, you know, potentially go out there and get injured or, you know, whatever. So yeah, I don't know, but it's the Rockies, so you never know what they're gonna do. So he might end up pitching 12 more innings this year. So, but something to keep an eye on with him, because I think it makes sense for them to, you know, pump the brakes and slow down his workload and kind of taper it off to where at the end of September he's not even pitching much, if at all.
Definitely. They're sort of like the anti-Rays, where it's like the Rays, you never know what they're going to do because they're like a step ahead of everyone, so it's sort of just like they're going to surprise you with something you don't know. And then the Rockies are just like, you never know what they're going to do because they're so just, nobody knows what they're doing. So it's just, yeah, exactly. They're unpredictable, but in a bad way. But
I
yeah,
I can't believe. Yeah, there's just so many things that are piling up there that I don't like. And Senzatella getting, that contract still is that every time he pitches, every day he pitches, I just like, how is he making $10 million a year?
They do so much goofy stuff. And then after the deadline, when they were like, I don't know who said it, if it was Schmidt, the GM, said like, yeah, well, we didn't make any trades at the deadline, but we were the only team that extended anybody. And it was just like, wait, what? Where have you been? The Padres extended Musgrove. The Braves extended Austin Riley. Yeah, cool. But no, that's not true. And also yours wasn't even the biggest, and it was might have been the goofiest. So yeah, I don't know what they're doing. And then they also like recently promoted their like video replay review guy to like the head of the stat department or something. I don't know, but also like he maintains his old role as well, so he's like doing two things at once. No idea what's going on there. I was listening to Effectively Wild, and they were talking about something like that, and yeah. I just, you never know what they're gonna do next. Maybe next they I don't know, maybe they turn Chris Bryant into a pitcher because they can't keep him healthy or something.
Seems DH like pitcher, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's the next Ohtani. There you go. Figured him out. You figured
marking
him out.
Marking him that way.
That would be wild. All right. Well, before we delve into Colorado insanity, I'll be there actually in a few weeks or so visiting a friend. So I'll be able to heckle them a little bit while I'm there. But
there you go.
Yeah, let's look a little more into the more upcoming future rather than my trip, which is in like 4 weeks. Let's look forward to this next week and think about what we're going to be looking out for. I'm going to ask you, what are you going to be watching this next week as in terms of bullpens?
Yeah, I guess some of the things, you know, we touched on a little bit was if does work the workload start, you know, seeming like changing, you know, direction for certain players. And, you know, we've seen it a little bit with Josh Hader now. Does Kimbrel get like a week off? Does, you know, what happens with some of those younger guys who haven't pitched a lot lately? Definitely want to see, you know, New York without Clay Holmes. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people are projecting it to go. I mean, Chapman probably gets the first chance, but, you know, Scott Efros has still been pitching well. He's definitely at least the number two option there. So I don't think anything is a given with Chapman, especially with how his season has gone in general. So, yeah, those are the things. I mean, there's not, I guess, seeing, you know, what happens in situations like Arizona and with the Angels. Mm-hmm. Angels closer role is still kind of back and forth between Ojeda and Tapera. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really all I got for, you know, what to watch for next week.
Yeah, I mean, those are some good points. I was also going to mention the Angels. I think the entire AL West I'll be watching, except for maybe Houston, where Presley is locked in. But yeah, like you said, I mean, we both thought Tapera was going to be the locked-in closer there when Iglesias got traded, but it seems like Quijada is going to factor in there, and Jimmy Hergett's on the closer committee on roster resource. So it'll be interesting to see what happens out there in Los Angeles, Anaheim, whatever you want to call it. He is pretty good. The human glitch, I've seen him referred to as.
Yeah.
But the A's is also a situation to watch for. I know that Puck is the, I don't know if you changed this yet, but Puck was the closer on your closer charts, but they haven't gotten a save in forever, and he just hasn't gotten a save either. And he was used in like the sixth and he's been used all over. He's been like the high leverage guy. So it seems like he's not the closer out there. And Zach Jackson has like the second most holds in baseball. So Danny Jimenez has also been used in the ninth inning each of the past 2 days. So it's looking like what I predicted, that they're going to ease Jimenez into the closer role and then, you know, rely on him so that they can sort of rest their young guys. And I don't know. It seems like Mark Kotze wants to use a guy that has experience, and Jimenez has experience from the beginning of the season. So I think they want him to be the closer. And we already talked about Seattle a little bit, where Munoz may start taking some time off, mm-hmm. which could open some more hold opportunities, but you don't really know how much they're going to push Seawald as well. Diego Castillo and Eric Swanson could really factor in there. And Matt Brash has just been really incredible since becoming a reliever. So I mean, that's a bullpen if you just need anybody to improve your ratios, go there. And then also Texas, I mean, like I said, the whole AL West, Texas is going to be interesting to watch. Are they going to go with a closer committee over the next week, or is it just going to be Jonathan Hernandez? Does Matt Moore start factoring into things more now that he's back from his paternity list / bereavement family medical emergency list stint over the last week or so? Yeah, I mean, all those bullpens are going to be pretty interesting to watch. But that's going to pretty much do it for the go ahead.
I was gonna say, I'll add one more that I forgot about. We didn't talk about it all today, but that's Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Tanner Scott has been not pitching well.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, I mean, they've been sticking with him, and now Bender's injured again, but I wonder if they make if they look to make a change there, if either Dylan Floro or Stephen O'Kurt pitching better.
Cardi B.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on the AL West, keep an eye on the Yankees, and keep an eye on the Marlins. Those are some places where saves might still be up for the taking. I suggested grabbing Danny Jimenez while you still can, and I'll do that here on the podcast as well. So go grab Danny Jimenez while you can. If you don't know, I suggested Lou Trevino like months ago, and he became the closer before he was traded. So you can trust me. I live in the East Bay. You can trust me. I know what's going on in Oakland. I got my sources. But yeah, that's gonna do it for the podcast. Do you want to plug your socials. And if not, you don't have to.
Sure, why not? It's I'm on Twitter at I am Rick Graham, and yeah, you can find my list or my work and all of you know, Jake and the reliever team's work at pitcherlist.com.
Yes, sir. And you can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. You can find all my work on PitcherList, as well as theathleteshub.org and BaseballHQ, where I do playing time analysis for the A's, Giants, and Diamondbacks. Or you can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. But that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. Talk to you guys next week.